This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant. Good morning. It is Friday. It is August 14th, and Russell Wilson, he sat up behind the podium talking to a number of people about everything that's happening with the Seahawks and letting Russ cook. And it was fairly funny because he was able to explain and talk about whether or not he agrees with that sentiment. Here was his answer, Paul, of is he familiar with Russ, let Russ cook, and what he thinks about that?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, I think the reality is that, you know, early in the games, you know, I want, you know, definitely, you know, rather than us having it be in the fourth quarter, I think to be able to, you know, make some stuff happen. I think we want to, I think we have a crazy stat of the lead of, you know, I think 56-0 when we have the lead, you know, by halftime and stuff like that. I think, you know, getting ahead.
Hold on. This is the one I wanted to play, Paul.
Have I ever retweeted it, you said?
Yes.
No, I haven't retweeted it, Art. You know, listen, I think that, you know, Twitter, it's a fun place to, for people to have fun and everything else. Listen, the reality is I want to win. That's all I really care about is going out there and finding ways to win, you know, and just constantly, you know, making plays.
Now that's the pre-programmed part, right? He went right back. He acknowledged that it's said. He understands what it is, but he's not going to say that, hey, I want to do more. He always wants to do more. He went to the very, 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 very benign take on the hashtag.
Do you think that Russell Wilson laughing there is essentially the same as the computer chip inside of him going, beep, beep, boop, boop, 10101110111, because no, maybe he has thought about it.
That's an earnest laugh. Like he gets.
Oh, it's earnest.
You,
okay.
You hear an earnest giggle.
Have I ever retweeted it? You said.
Yes.
No, I haven't retweeted it, Art.
No, that's a legitimate chuckle. Here's the part where it gets interesting, Paul, because he was asked then about the idea of, hey, getting going earlier in games. Is there some truth to this idea that put the ball in Russell's hands and run the good offense earlier in a game?
The reality is that, you know, early in the games, you know, I want, you know, definitely, you know, rather than us having it be in the fourth quarter, I think to be able to, you know, make some stuff happen. I think we want to, I think we have a crazy stat of the lead of, you know, I think 56-0 when we have the lead, you know, by halftime and stuff like that. I think, you know, getting ahead is a key thing. You know, I definitely believe in finishing strong. I think we've won a lot of games in the fourth quarter, you know, been do some fun things in the fourth quarter and in the games. But let's treat every quarter as the fourth, you know, and I think that's kind of my mentality always.
Well, he's saying a lot of things that the militant Hawks fans, the Hawksplainers online have been saying. So I don't know, Danny, maybe he is somebody that in between all the preparation and teaching DK Metcalf how to swim and all the things that he does, he goes to the internet and he says, you know what, they've got a point.
He does want to cook. No, it's clear. He wants to cook breakfast. He doesn't just want to make dinner at the very end. Like, he wants to get going earlier. Is he right?
Pancakes with blueberries. Is that what Russell Wilson would serve?
Get some waffles?
Here's the thing. I think that they should open it up a little bit more, but when Russell Wilson is cooking this year, he is essentially going to be cooking in a kitchen with a leaky gas pipe, hand sanitizer all around him, coffee, creamer, flour, and sugar. All of those things, Danny, are extremely flammable. That's because he's going to have an offensive line in front of him that could be the worst that he's ever had in front of him. And I think that we need to admit that, yes, this is
the
guy.
He's had some bad offensive lines. There have been some bad offensive lines in front of him. It's not like the offensive line has ever been accused of being good.
He's gotten sacked 99 times the last 2 years, Danny, and yeah. I actually think that there's a potential for him to be sacked more than he was over the last 2 years. And honestly, that opens itself up to the most terrifying possibility of all for this coming season. No matter how good of shape Russell Wilson's in, I'm going, Danny. What if this is the bad year? What if this is the year where the bad thing happens? I'm not saying it, but what if this is it?
Now, you can't play scared, right? You can't play to prevent a player from getting hurt. And the idea of being able to push out in front early and run the good offense before you get to the final 5 minutes of the second quarter and you're about to go to halftime, like the idea of calling a game with an idea towards scoring earlier and not playing field position, I 100% agree with that. I don't think he needs to attempt 40 throws a game. The idea of giving yourself a better chance and not playing field position in the first quarter, but actually trying to score touchdowns, I absolutely think, and I like the fact that Russell's saying it. I like that he made the joke and, hey, I know about let Russ cook, and I think Twitter's fun. And then he's asked again about it, and he makes it clear that, like, yeah, let's treat every quarter like the fourth. Amen. I love to hear it.
I like hearing it, too. Don't get me wrong. I think he's extremely confident in himself, and based off of what Jake Heaps has been saying on Tom, Jake, and Stacy, this guy might be in the best shape he's ever been in, which is really saying something. But you remember how last season ended, right, for the Seahawks on offense?
I do. They fell way behind in the first half, and then they played like hell to come back, and it's like pretty much every divisional playoff game I've seen over the past 5 years with involving the Seahawks.
But let's focus it a little bit more. What was the last play of the season offensively for the Seahawks?
I don't remember the last play.
Russell Wilson got sacked on a 3rd-and-5, and it was pretty quick. They had 6 guys in protection, and Russell Wilson still ends up going down with Jacob Hollister staying in to help, which honestly, probably not the best of ideas in the world. But he goes down on a sack. The Seahawks end up punting. The 2 3rd-and-longs, the Packers convert on both of them, and that's it. I think this offense.
But that's the reason why you should play more aggressively earlier, so you're not in this desperate straits and trying to run the table in the fourth quarter to win. Because that was basically when it got to the fourth quarter, they had to play perfect offensively and defensively to win. They dug themselves a hole because they weren't more aggressive
earlier. True. But at the same time, I feel like you should be a matchup-based offense, and that week to week, the game plan should change. And I do think that the game plan should have worked against Green Bay. They gave up 300 yards rushing the next week. San Francisco's running offense is awesome. Seattle's running offense, even with those two running backs, it should have been better than what it was in that game. And I think Seattle had a little bit too much faith in both Travis Homer, but specifically more so in Marshawn Lynch. I think you change your game plans week to week. And as you said a little bit earlier, I'm with you on this one. You don't want to make it turning into a Russell Wilson throwing it 40 to 50 times a game. If that happens, I think he's going to get sacked 60 times behind this offensive line. And it's not entirely the offensive line's fault all the time. He does hold on to it from time to time, but he does always seem to feel like he is running for his life. So that is really my only concern when it comes to letting Russ cook. I feel that he is going to potentially put himself at more risk than he ever has before. It's great that he's in good shape, but that's what I'm a little bit concerned about. And we all know what Russell Wilson's best at. It is when he has the play action fake cooking, because that allows him to throw the football down the field to a guy in Tyler Lockett, who is no Tyreek Hill. He's not burning it past everybody. He's a great route runner, and I think he's a very good wide receiver. DK Metcalf might be that guy, but that play-action fake sets up Russell Wilson for what he does best. And I do think that you still want to be able to run the football and establish the run every single game to some extent.
I guess my major point for advocating and saying, let's be more aggressive offensively in the first half, is to say, you can't coach this team like it's 2012. Like you can't coach this team like you have the league's best defense, because you don't. You probably won't ever again. And not only that, you don't have a quarterback in his first or second year that you're trying to figure out what he does best. You know what he does best. And there are so many times in watching where all of a sudden they're inept offensively for a quarter and a half, and then they start moving the ball down the field. And you're like, this isn't unpredictable. It's not like, unless you're telling me that Russell's like a boxer who needs a round and a half to understand his opponent and really start to figure out where things, I don't think that's how it works. I think something changes in the way their offense runs. And I think they give more control to the quarterback and they play at more tempo. Let's do that in the first quarter. Like, let's not wait. Let's not wait and let the other team score. And they went almost 2 calendar years without scoring a touchdown on their first offensive drive. That's a reflection of how you're game planning. Let's change that. Like, let's not fall into as big a hole. And it's not so much, I'm not hung up on the leading by 4 points at halftime stat. I'm just more, don't constantly ask yourself to have to play perfect in the fourth quarter to be able to win.
I'm with you on that. I don't necessarily believe that the offense is the reason that that's always happening, though, because let's also be honest, sometimes when the Seahawks fall in a hole, defenses lighten up a little bit, and then Russ just carves them up. I don't know why these defenses.
Oh, it's like the rope-a-dope strategy. It's like when Ali let Foreman burn himself out, hitting himself on the ropes, they're rope-a-doping him. It's Danny and Gallant. It's time to get to what to watch for.
What to Watch For every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
All right, Paul. Mariners had their first off day. First one since the season resumed. They're off. They're in Houston today. Nobody likes Houston, right? The A's wanted to fight him. Joe Kelly says he has no respect for him. Says he was body shamed by Dusty Baker. I also looked at this. Do you want to know where they are in playoff positioning, Paul?
You know what? Why not? Sure, it's Friday. Let's get some happy thoughts out there.
They're 7-13, which is the second worst record in the American League. The only team that's worse is Boston. But they're only 2.5 games out of a playoff spot.
Anything is possible, especially if you stop watching the games when the bullpen comes in.
We should just have a record for where they are as starters and then what the bullpen's record is.
Yeah. There's going to be a consolation bracket, and that allows them to make those playoffs. Do you think that they're going to hit any Astros in this series? I know what all you savages listening this morning are thinking. You want some violence. You want the Astros to get punished. You think it's going to happen?
I don't. I mean, I think they'll hit somebody just because you go through three games and probably somebody's going to get hit by a pitch. But I don't think there will be a fracas.
Okay. Oh, whoops. I let that one get away from me. My bad.
What to watch for?
Bregman's down on the ground, all woozy.
No, it's Correa. Correa is the one we really
Oh, like. Yeah. I'm with you on that. I actually do like Alex Bregman. Anyway, I'll move on from that topic entirely and talk about one-time NFL version of a felon, Greg Williams, now defensive coordinator with the New York Jets after, you know, getting 11 letters from teams to be head coaches, but ultimately losing out to that last possible gig to Freddie Kitchens. He took some shots at the Seahawks defense when he was asked about Jamal Adams yesterday.
You know, we're very multiple in how we do those things anyway. You know, we're not just a stand, you know, but Jamal may get bored there because they don't use their safety type things and all the different complexities of maybe this, not showing what they're doing as much as we do.
Maybe, shut up, Greg. Thank you.
Pete Carroll was on 9:50 a.m. and he said yesterday, "We don't make as many mistakes as he does." It's a pretty solid clapback. Pretty solid clapback. And then I saw Cam Chancellor. You guys are going to have to help me. Cam Chancellor posted a response to that today, and it has an emoji of, it looks like someone scratching their chin and kind of trying to puzzle it out. Does that mean I'm baffled by it? Like, is that what the emoji means?
He thinks that dude's crazy. I mean, he posted seven of them. Seven, yes. And then an arrow pointing down at Greg Williams and that back padding that he did for his defense and saying that Jamal Adams is going to get bored in another defense. I think he's going to be happy, that's for sure.
What to watch for?
Dame Lillard, Diamond Dame, scores 42. The Blazers hold on and beat the Nets. Guy missed a shot at the final end that would have, well, potentially eliminated the Blazers. The Blazers are going to play a play-in game. Do you like the idea of playing games? I think it's pretty exciting.
I do, too. I will watch every single Blazers game as they try to make it into the playoffs. Damian Lillard's been the MVP of the bubble. I really made large, large efforts because for whatever reason, the game was blacked out for me. I don't even know why. Like, I could not watch a game on TNT because it was blacked out for me on Sling. So I had to do all sorts of things and finagling and all that. And I was, as soon as I tuned in, Damian Lillard hit a three-point shot from the half-court logo. Just pulls up. It was like 3 seconds off the shot clock. He has been so fun to watch. I'm really enjoying it. Portland can't play a lick of defense, so that's been a little frustrating. But I'm excited for that game. That'll be fun. Ja Morant versus Damian Lillard.
My money's on Dame.
Same.
Dame's been a cold-blooded killer over the course of this bubble.
He's been awesome.
Plus, he's not making any friends on social media. I love to see it. That is what to watch for. It's now time for us to bring in the professor for our Friday Morning Drive.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Presented by DivorceLawyersForMen.com.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Yo, Professor, are you one of those cooking people, especially after you heard Russell Wilson talking yesterday to the media?
No, I'm not one of the cooking people because, again, I think that, I think what he's pointing out is maybe let him do a little bit more early. I'm fine on that. But cooking, no, because really this needs to be a running team. It's great running the football. It just has to get a better start on offense in the first half so you don't have, like last year, you had so few games where this team was leading at the half. And so to go into a passing type of an offense, you know, I don't think it's the right thing for this team.
John, any updates? It sounded like there was a pretty uneventful workout yesterday. I read that as meaning no injuries. Seattle's actually been in pretty good shape when it comes to all of those things, all things considered.
Yeah, they really have been. I mean, the only, I guess, concern still has to be Daryl Taylor because it looks like he's going to need another week or so as he comes back from that stress injury that he had surgery on, that stress fracture in the foot. But no, I mean, it looks like they've not added any injuries. And I know Bill Belichick was just talking about that today, that he was saying that the ramp-up period has actually been pretty good because if you go back to 2011, when there was no offseason because of the lockout, a lot of guys immediately came in and got Achilles tears and got hamstring injuries. I know, in the first 10, 12 days of practice back then, there was at least 10 Achilles tears, and so far, so good league-wide, but I think the ramp-up period turns out to be good, and it's good for Seattle.
Did you have any thoughts on Greg Williams and his comments about the Seahawks defense and how Jamal Adams might get bored in it?
Yeah, again, kind of goes to Greg's ego because now what he's basically saying is that, my ability to put Jamal Adams in different positions in a very complex defense is one of the reasons for his success, and that's not going to be the case coming to Seattle. I think Pete Carroll had the best comment, though. He says, "Well, we didn't make the mistakes that you see back there." I thought that was pretty good.
It was pretty good. The other thing is, it's not like Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas were forgotten after pieces. Seattle doesn't run some sort of Tampa 2 boring interchangeable safety defense. Like, they let their dudes make plays. I don't think Cam Chancellor or Earl Thomas felt handcuffed by the defense.
No, it's simplicity sometimes works. I mean, again, as long as you're not predictable, and this team's still not predictable, I mean, all I know is that, Pete Carroll has taken two teams to the Super Bowl, and with the exception of last year, the defense has been consistently good through all the years. And so, and again, was that coaching last year that caused the bad defense? No, it was they just didn't have a pass rush, and so they had to adjust accordingly. So, but this is Greg kind of being Greg because Greg likes to speak well of himself, even though sometimes it may be doing it through different channels.
Certainly quite the back patter. Kyler Murray's been getting a lot of back pats from Cardinals camp because apparently he is now Mr. Big Chest. He's getting all swole. He's getting all bulked up. He's listed at 207, but per Christian Kirk and Chandler Jones, even though Murray won't say what he now weighs, he has bulked up. Do you think that added bulk will help Murray out in year two?
I think so, too, because, again, what you can look at is, has he taken that Russell Wilson approach where, each year he's going to do something different to make him a better player? And, with the fact that he runs the football, the fact that now he's probably stronger. I mean, we watched Russell Wilson here in the last couple of years because, he did look like a lot of core type of work that made him even throw better, move better, and all that stuff. I know watching him yesterday, he's really moving well and doing well. So, no, I think it's going to add to Kyler Murray's advancement as one of the better young quarterbacks in football.
Professor, are the Seahawks looking for another edge rusher? Should we be expecting a potential addition to Clay Matthews?
You would hope so, yeah, because, and I know I'll be talking to Pete Carroll at 11:30 today that, I think a lot of it has to depend on, Daryl Taylor and his availability, because now if he's going to miss the first week of the padded practices, that's going to set him back and make it tougher for him to come in there and be able to do much in that early part of the season. So you'd have to think, I mean, they've got three roster spots right now, and so with all the moves that are happening, Everson Griffin going down and getting a deal with the Dallas Cowboys on the defensive tackle side, Tim Jernigan looks like he's going to sign with Jacksonville. We already know that Mike Daniels has signed with the Cincinnati Bengals. It's like, yeah, it's time to make a move.
Per the Wall Street Journal, Washington football team, famously named, may be trying to force Daniel Snyder to sell his majority stakes. We're talking about the minority shareholders there. Do you think that that's actually going to happen? Because he has faced a lot of pressure this offseason, and he's relented in the face of said pressure to this point.
No, I don't think it'll happen. Again, you can see the, there's a pretty bad relationship right now with the minority owners that owns 40% of the team. But again, Dan Snyder owns the majority, and the majority rules. And so they may try to do that, but how can you force somebody to sell when he's not wanting to sell?
Well, they could look to the NBA, which basically did that for Donald Sterling, but I don't know if they'll be able to follow that precedent because they basically got Sterling ruled that he wasn't competent to hold on to his team and then made his wife sell it. I don't think that's a potential way out for the NBA.
Shelly got him declared incompetent.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, so that she could sell.
That she could sell. That was such a weird end around. Look, when you get invited into the club, it's hard to force you out of the club. Those are the rules of the club.
Exactly. And, you know, it's the golden rule. Those with the gold, they rule.
Kind of want to grab some of their gold, Professor. How do you think I'd be as a ruler? I think I'd be terrible. I think I'd be a despot.
Yeah, I'd be bad, too. I'm just not a good boss. I mean, that's what the, you know, I'm a worker bee. I'm the one going out and trying to gather the stuff and doing all that stuff. But to be the director and all that stuff, that wouldn't be me.
I would say this, though, John, if you were in charge of everything, I think we'd place less emphasis on sort of the uniforms, the clothing that people wore.
You're
and I
right
think
about
that'd probably
that.
Be a good thing.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
if we were a little less focused on that, we'd all be healthier.
I would agree.
I don't know about that. I'm all about the aesthetics. I am the person who has bought all sorts of Pacific Northwest themed sports clothing. I don't know. I think you guys are both wrong on that. And Danny, yes, I know you hate the bosses, but yeah, I'm terrified of the idea of you as a boss. Okay. So we also have seen some interesting comments made about some of the younger quarterbacks in the league over the last couple of weeks, John. And I'm curious what you think about the Dwayne Haskins versus Alex Smith possible competition in Washington. This is perhaps the worst thing that you can say in a complimentary way about your quarterback, but Terry McLaurin, young wide receiver for Washington, said that Haskins is this year more mentally focused. I don't think that's exactly the best of compliments.
No, I think that you can see, particularly with a quarterback that only had 1 year experience as a starter in college, that it's hard to come in there and pick things up and be able to do things in the first year. So I think that's a positive sign because what you're looking at now, he's learned. He spent the offseason, even though he hasn't had any offseason program other than what we're seeing right now, to be able to advance his game. But no, I think that, remember, it's hard to focus if you're not going to be in the part where you're going to win the starting job. And he didn't win the starting job. It was given to him in about, midseason or so. So no, I think that's a positive comment.
All right, Professor, you got the coach, Pete Carroll, coming by at 11:30 today?
That is correct.
We're going to make sure to be listening. Thanks so much, man.
Thank you.
That is the Professor John Clayton. You can hear him 10 to noon on the John Clayton Show, and he will be having the coach. Pete Carroll is going to be sitting down with him before the team takes the field, kind of their first full practice that they'll be having today. I had a lot of fun with possible headlines for the next segment. Rookie corner proves liability in coverage. The play action fake that fooled no one. Here's my personal favorite. A tight end cost a rookie his chance with the Seahawks. We look at Seattle's bubble buster, a rookie cornerback, next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
All right, Danny, just get it out of your system. We're about to talk about a fairly amusing story involving the Seattle Seahawks. It did result in misfortune for the person who is at the center of it. You need to get your puns out. Just get it over with, okay?
Looks like one bubble team has been eliminated.
Stop.
Coverage liability.
Oh, Lord.
He was expecting safety help over the top.
Could have used a little safety help.
Yeah, yeah. Kema Siverant suffering through a lapse in judgment.
Yep, he was released earlier this week after he was caught on video trying to sneak a woman into the team's hotel. Look, the guy was probably not going to make the roster. Undrafted player. There's going to be a lot of fun to be had with this story as well. So I'm just going to start off with the serious and the good sign. The Seahawks are taking the bubble conscience seriously as a whole. Obviously not old Kema here. Kema was looking to have himself a good time, and I sort of feel bad for him, but this was a really dumb move on his part. But the Seahawks, they found out about this quickly, And they sent a very strong message, I think, to the rest of the team. If you screw this up, you will face consequences. And maybe it's a good thing that the first person that violates bubble policy, Danny, is somebody that's expendable, because you see, that guy just got kicked to the curb. And honestly, he might never have a chance to play in the NFL again. I hope he does. I kind of feel bad for him in that sense. But again, just dumb. What are you thinking, man? Once in a lifetime opportunity. You're an undrafted player.
You've got to have at least a couple starts before you start trying something like this. I mean, if you've been a starter there for a couple years or gotten a Pro Bowl, it's not like it would be okay, but I don't know if you'd lose your job. Like, if you're there, you can't be trying something like this as an undrafted rookie. Like, if you're like that as an undrafted rookie, what would you be like if you were actually good?
Yeah.
Like, what sort of stuff would you – if you're willing to try this when they've literally got – almost nothing invested in you. Like, what would you be like if you actually had some clout and some juice in the organization?
The answer is Antonio Brown. Or at least you'd be on the path to the dark side of being Antonio Brown.
I'm curious about some of the logistics.
Same.
Because Tom Pelissero reported that they attempted to – the young lady was dressed in Seahawks garb as if she were a player, which created a number of different questions for me. Like, what lady's going to be able to pass for a football player? And in that case, is there any doubt that she was wearing a Tyler Lockett jersey? Like, it had to be the only person on the roster who you would even have a chance of not looking at someone and saying, oh my gosh, that's totally not a football player, is if it was someone. And that's not a criticism of Tyler, it's just he's a small dude.
Well, if you wear a jersey, I don't think that's believable either. You're just going to be walking around wearing a jersey. The only way you could maybe pull that off is if it's one of those Virginia Mason Athletic Center practice jerseys that they have on. So you'd have to have like a fake jersey. That would involve a lot of deviance and a lot of planning by old Kima Severin. And I'm not sure that Kima necessarily had the wherewithal to go that far into it. Look, if I were in Kima's shoes, I may have offered Seahawks-branded hoodie, Seahawks-branded sweats, and I would have just said, all right, like, just be as baggy as possible, stand on your tippy toes, and walk yourself in. Because that to me, would be actually believable. And I base that mainly off of my time at Syracuse University, because every single athlete, that was all they wore. Hoodie and sweats, they were always team-branded.
Questions. Oh, yes. Wouldn't it still be social distance violating to be bringing your teammate into your room? So wouldn't this still have been a problem that you had to investigate?
That's a good question.
I think the understanding is that the players are all in it together, right? They've all been tested. I don't know if you're forbidden from socializing with the players or going into a teammate's room, but maybe. I mean, probably that would all things considered be safest if everybody went to their room and stayed apart. But, yeah, it seems problematic. Does the ruse make it worse? Because if it was just one of those sort of spur of the moment, like, oh, my gosh, let me see if I can do this, just walk quick and try to blend in, it's not quite as bad as, like, plotting. Like, trying to – how do I defeat the security measures that have been put in place?
Yeah.
Like, how am I – like, it gives it, like, what malice aforethought. The legal term, like, you actually planned. It wasn't just a spur of the moment lust that triggered you.
There's that question. And I also wonder, I mean, did she get in? Did she get up to that hotel room? Is that why he's released? Because she actually got into his room and there was legitimate fear that maybe something may have been brought into the Seahawks locker room by this Trojan horse of sorts?
I'm going to guess that it didn't matter whether she got in the room or not. Like, the attempt was disqualifying. Like, that even trying it means that you're going to get fired. But it does bring up the question, if he was caught, should they have just let the young lady go to his room? After all, if he's going to be fired anyway, like, firing him without actually, like, in the process, like, before the actual transgression is committed, is the worst of all worlds, right? Like, you try to break the rules, and the attempt to break the rules, you don't even get the reward of what you are attempting to break the rules for. Like, you just, you lose entirely. Everything, like, nothing goes in your favor.
Don't you want him to learn some sort of lesson, though? Because you can't have anything good coming out of it. I feel like, no, you gotta block him. Gotta block him.
You clearly have a lesson. I mean, in terms of, and look, you can combine this with what's happened in Cleveland with Zach Plesac and Mike Clevenger. Like the fact that it's not just fans and media that are mad, but teammates were furious with those dudes. Like, I do think actually guys are taking this more seriously than anything that they're more willing to criticize. The Cleveland Indians were more willing to criticize teammates than I can remember. Than I can remember even instances of criminal behavior where guys will be usually be like, hey, I don't agree with what happened. I don't know all the details. They're kind of noncommittal about it. I hope the best for him. I'm really sorry anybody got hurt. And in this, it's like, no, man, that's selfish. Like, that's terrible. You have to ask them because they were bad teammates.
Right, and they were hypocritical, too. That's the worst part. I mean, they did PSAs for the Ohio government on how to wear a mask and how to properly social distance. In fact, they were in the same one, which is honestly incredible. But go back to Pete Carroll's comments when I asked him about just, are you guys thinking about doing something like the New Orleans Saints are doing? Clearly they are doing something similar to what the New Orleans Saints are doing. These guys are at a hotel and visitors are not welcome. And, you know, you hear Pete say that, and I think sometimes you might underestimate Pete because he is so polite with the way that he words things, and he's like, you know, just a bubble conscience. And it sounds sort of like some sort of hippie fantasy, but this is what Pete's going to do. I mean, if you step on his toes, he is going to kick you out the door. And I respect that they operated in this way. Honestly, he shouldn't have gotten a second chance. This sends such a good message to the rest of the team. Who is going to try the Pete Carroll right now? Who is going to try the rest of the Seahawks right now? And honestly, if you're one of the leaders on this team too, you are probably going to go up to every single young player and say, hey, you know that app Tinder? Hey, you know that app Bumble? Hey, you know that app Hinge? Hey, you know all those apps? Delete them. You are deleting them for the foreseeable future. And you can get back on them once we get out of the hotel rooms. But right now, bro, put your phone in the basket. You are done. Cut off. Zip.
Did you see what happened in the NBA? Because they passed. The NBA is moving into the playoffs. And they've relaxed some of the rules on who can enter. Family members and people with long-standing, because they couldn't just say family members. Because they can't just say, like, players, you have to have been married to have essentially.
How are they going to prove that, by the way? How are they going to prove that? I feel like that's going to be difficult for NBA teams to say, like, oh, you don't actually know this person for that long.
Let me see your Instagram DMs. Okay? Seriously, everybody, like, turn over your DMs now.
That's exactly, because if you saw the wording of the second part of the announcement, it's impossible to try and really regulate that, Paul, but they're trying to, because the second part of it was, you have to have had an in-person relationship with the person. You can't have just met them over a social media app. It's basically saying, like, you can't meet someone through your Instagram DMs and bring them into the bubble because you're interested in having them there. That's not allowed.
But who is to block love that could be had via a slide?
Look, dude, they're saying that Instagram love can wait. Like, that's got to wait until outside the bubble. That's outside the bubble time. That's you time. When you bring them inside the bubble, like, we're not having any Instagram relationships here. You're not somebody that you wanted to just swing through and pass on out. Like, no, it's got to be longstanding. We're going to need to see a utility bill. We're going to need to see some sort of documentation that you've been in the same spot. A shared bank account will count. But there has to be some sort of tangible proof that this person has been in your life in a way other than social media.
Well, if anyone in the NBA wants to hire someone who is okay with Photoshop, I mean, you could have me, you know, make you some photos. Hey, this photo's from back in the day. Oh, yeah, this is from, March of 2018. Wow, what a time it was for me and this person on Instagram whose name I'm not 100% sure what it is. Blessed, so blessed. It's Danny and Gallant. He is Danny O'Neill. I'm Paul Gallant. 1-0, 1-0, 1-1-1. Beep, beep, boop, boop. Russell Wilson. That is what he sometimes, I believe, has going through his brain when someone throws a curveball question at him. He handled a curveball of a question at yesterday's press conference in a very amusing way. Plus, if you are the worst teammate ever, like Akeem or Siverin, how are you going to defend yourself to the public? You will hear how one player tried to do that next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
The R-Dub 3000. It's your top-of-the-line NFL quarterback programmed for greatness. And to show you just how good the 2020 model is, I want to show you what happens when it's dealt with or handled a curveball, because one of my favorite things is watching the RDub 3000 kind of churn in place for just a moment. You can hear it when it's happening. He's looking for a place. He's trying to figure out what line is he going to go with. The width of the field is 53 and a third yards. It's 100 yards long. Is he going to talk about all of the things that he prepares? Here exactly, Larry Stone, Seattle Times columnist, asks him about Pete's assessment that Russell's kind of now at the top of his game.
You know, Larry, I think, it's funny because I think that I'm definitely in the zone. I think that also, too, as well, I think just, you know, from a play standpoint, you know, every game I want to put on a performance. Every play, every practice, you know, I want to be great. You know, I wake up thinking about being great, Larry. You know, it doesn't leave your mind. Every day, everything that I do is purposeful, and it's not wasted moments, not wasted energy.
It's and maybe it's the fact that I've listened to so many of these, but it's those moments when Russell kind of gets caught on the wrong foot and he's not quite sure where he wants to go. And then you can actually hear the programming kick in. Like, you can hear it when he gets to the point he's talking about also too, from a play perspective. He's basically saying all of these stalling words, but eventually the programming kicks in. And then I am going to always laugh when I hear this.
You know, I wake up thinking about being great, Larry.
I think up waking up being great, Larry.
I like that. I like that a lot. You know,
I wake up thinking about being great, Larry.
He's got some filibuster in him. And
yes,
he did say he doesn't waste any moments. Well, I would argue that a lot of that quote was a wasted moment, but I'm not going to hate on it, because that is a skill, Danny, that those of us in the sports talk radio industry need to have. Because you'll be able to hear it with me all the time. Sometimes there will be moments where in the middle of me saying something, I will totally forget where I was going. And then I will use some sort of filler words like, you know, what you really need to know is. And then you end up like expanding the sentence out. And I try to get back on track 45 seconds later. Oh, here I am, back to the point I was trying to make. I like seeing Russell Wilson have to deal with the same problems in a press conference setting. He's just like all of us.
You know, I wake up thinking about being great, Larry.
I do too.
Do you do that?
I wake up thinking about being great, Paul.
Oh, I wake up thinking like, oh God, it's late. I kind of slept in and pressed the snooze button three times. I got to put on clothes, shower.
He did. Russell's got to be a happy guy too, though, right? Because wasn't he the one talking about getting a couple stars? We need a couple stars. Free agency's big. We need those opportunities. We need to have those guys. Well, he got that guy. He got that guy in Jamal Adams.
You know, I've always admired Jamal from a distance. You know, I got to see him coming in as a younger player in first, second year or whatever, and just the kind of leader he was and just the energy that he brought to the field at the Pro Bowls and stuff like that. Just really admired his juice, his energy, his focus every day on the field. You know, he was dialed in, you know, and so I think he's already done that already in the walkthroughs and practices that we've had out here. You can tell that he processes so quickly. You know, he knows how to get sacks. He knows how to make plays. He knows how to has the knack for the ball. And just to continue to add that, we had Diggs last year come in, obviously, with Jamal. It's a special group for sure.
He's almost out of breath when he's talking, and he speaks so quickly at the very beginning of it. You can tell he is excited.
He should be. The Seahawks went and did what he wanted, right? And I don't think they did it because he asked for it. But I think that it shows the addition of Jamal Adams shows that Seattle is very much on the, hey, we got to make the most of this window of our quarterback's prime. That we can't long term, if the best play is keeping two first round picks, that might be true for the New York Jets. That's not true for us. Long term, the best is getting a guy that we know is one of the best safeties in the game right now and paying what it costs to get him.
They definitely committed to bringing in somebody for Russ. I do wonder if you were to give him a little truth serum and to get him to move past the filibusters that he can plug into any answer so that he doesn't entirely reveal what's going through his head. If he would say, well, I would have liked Clowney back too. Or, well, I would have liked a wide receiver. I don't know, like Antonio Brown. This is definitely a nice, I think, makeup gift. But is this potentially for Russ the equivalent of a really romantic date where one person is expecting something at the end. They've been together for 7, 8, 9 years now, and then at the very end, hey, honey, we're getting a dog, as opposed to the dropping down on the knee and really offering the super prize.
Could be. I don't want them to make him happy. I don't think that they should be following their quarterback's directions for personnel. I do think that if you're Russell Wilson, though, you have to look at it and say that we're pretty much on the same page. I might not agree with the choice of the gift, or I might have chose something different, but they're doing what they think is the best answer to what I want. Antonio Brown's probably a different discussion because I don't think that's a resources question. I think that's a citizenship and human being question. It's not a matter of you didn't go get him because he was too expensive. Clowney is he wants too much money, right? Like at the end of the day, the reason Jadeveon Clowney is not with the Seahawks and doesn't look like he'll be joining the Seahawks is because he asked for more money than they were willing to spend. And he was adamant about it. He didn't even get back to him. Going out and getting Jamal Adams is a statement that, look, we are getting the best player that we think we can for the value that we're getting. And you might have wanted Jadeveon Clowney too. We don't have that in our budget, but we got this guy. It's clear that we're not just saying, hey, we're going to stay the course and play the long game here. It's clear that they believe that now is the time with their quarterback at where he is.
Yeah, they're committing to now, and they are giving him quite the present. I do wonder if that is the one that he wants above all others, but it should theoretically help the defense take a step forward. How big of a step? That will remain to be seen because the pass rush needs to improve.
Zach Plesac, we've mentioned this a couple times. Zach Plesac is the Cleveland pitcher who went out in Chicago on Saturday. He broke curfew. He was sent home separate from the team flight. He's explained, quarantined for 3 days, according by Major League Baseball's rule, forced to get a couple of COVID tests. He released a video yesterday explaining his side of it, and he was mad.
I want to get on here and clear the air on some stuff, kind of voice my opinion, voice some raw emotion to you guys, and get out the truth so that you guys can kind of understand what's happening so we can all be on the same page, because the media really... Is terrible, man. The media is terrible, and they do some evil things to create stories and to make things sound better, makes things sound worse. And truthfully, I'm disgusted the way the media has handled this whole situation surrounding our team.
Now, he goes on to basically explain chapter and verse what happened, which is exactly what the media reported, which is he went out to dinner with friends. He then went back to a friend's house. He broke curfew. He was then told, okay, you have to ride in a car. Like, you can't join the team flight back and put on quarantine. And he explains afterwards saying, like, as I was getting tested by the doctors, I was trying to ask some questions to find out if what we really did is dangerous.
And I've had to take these nasal swabs, both negative, and I asked the doctor, you know, today, first off, what is a safe environment for us to be in? You know, because things are inevitable. You're going to see people. You're going to socially interact based on... You can't sit in a room all day is the truth of the matter. So I wanted to know how we can be safe and moving forward, how I can basically make sure no one else gets put at risk who are at high risk and danger.
Wow, you didn't know? Well, I got an idea, Zach. It's to not do what you did. And, you know... Forget the whole calling the media evil thing. I don't care about that at all. I know some people are going to get worked up about that side of it. We really, that does not matter. What matters is your teammates hate you right now.
Exactly.
I mean, that's like dude, how about address that?
Media. Yeah. It's not the media. And the other thing is, you want to know what to do to be safe? Major League Baseball told you what to do. Like, they gave you a handout. You didn't have to ask questions. You didn't have to. You know what you'll do to be safe? Be in your hotel room by 10 p.m. Don't leave your hotel room to go out and socialize with people. You decided to do all those things. You're now, I just want to know what's going to be safe. I'll tell you what's going to be safe. Follow the protocols that have been set out. You want to protect people who are at risk? Don't do that stuff.
Right.
Also, make it all while driving a video, while driving in the car and not wearing your seatbelt properly, wearing it around your waist.
That's really safe.
Like, maybe it's the mom in me, but I was like, what are we doing?
You could hear the engine in the background. I mean, even the audio version of that. What are you doing, dude?
What are you doing?
Really?
What are you doing?
What are you doing, man? Come on,
man. Seriously, if we're gonna make a rules for PR for athlete apologies, number one, don't sign up to take an L for somebody else that's already being an idiot. Like, don't volunteer yourself to, like, actually, that person's not that bad. There's no reason for you to do that. The second thing I would say is don't get on video. Don't go post your own video. Don't do it from your car, but just don't post your own video. Maybe have some other rules. If you have some PR rules,
wear like a few less hundred grand worth of diamonds while doing it.
Yeah,
well, I don't know why that just really bothered me.
The diamond encrusted pinky ring was tough. It's a tough look. The diamond encrusted pinky ring while you're talking about how righteous you were and wronged by the media, that was a tough look.
So did he do anything right with this video? Seriously.
At the very end, he did. Where I was like, if you could do, I'll play the end of it.
Okay. Because
the end of it, if you distilled it down to 30 seconds, I can give you the 30 seconds he should have said. We'll do that next as we bring Michael Bumpus in.